This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Regressing to the mean since 2015, it's the Hockey PDO Cast with your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy, James Myrtle. James, what's going on, man?
Not much. It's good to be here. What an exciting 2 weeks for hockey fans. I mean, it's been the way that social media picked up on Sunday for the release of the protected list was pretty neat to see.
Yeah, it's really funny how, you know, we spend the full season working our way towards the Stanley Cup final, deciding on the biggest stage who's going to be crowned champion, and like that entire 2 weeks or whatever as that series was going on, I felt like people were just like desperately waiting for this period of time here where we can start kind of shifting our sights towards the expansion draft and free agency and the entry draft itself. So it's gonna be pretty fun. I mean, it's content heaven for people like you and I because there's so much to discuss.
Yeah, I remember when I was running my own site and it was kind of doing league-wide stuff. It was all in July, like end of June, early July, that was the highest traffic peak for NHL coverage of the whole year, which is crazy because there's no games then, right? But this is when people really get tuned in, dialed in, and it's so weird in hockey where the first round of the playoffs is really like the biggest spike, and then the rest of the playoffs, like you said, it kind of fades, and then now it really picks up again, and the weather's finally getting nice in Toronto, but we're all paying attention to what's happening in the NHL. So,
well, it's just nice that I feel like this is just like fun, exciting, optimistic stuff to talk about. I feel like during the season, we spend so much time discussing just like silly things like offside reviews and coaches challenges and goalie interference and all this stuff that just like makes your head spin. And you're just like, oh, are we actually doing this again? But now like this is all exciting. It feels like there's a ray of hope with this Vegas franchise coming in because the possibilities are kind of endless if you think about it.
Could you imagine being George McPhee and the staff there? Like I've talked to some of the staff there, and it's just like what a glorious opportunity to start from scratch. It's like doing your fantasy hockey draft times a billion, and you're going to actually see the results on the ice in the next. I don't know. Just what a dream job. I hope at some point I get to be the GM of an expansion team.
Well, yeah, don't we all? I mean, and you know, we do need to give the NHL a little bit of credit here because it's I know we spent a lot of time questioning a lot of the decision making and how they run their business, but it's pretty clear that they've learned from past expansion draft failures or hiccups. And I think I don't know how you feel about this team. We're obviously gonna discuss what it's gonna look like more here as the show goes on, but I'm pretty optimistic about it. You know, I think they're gonna be decently competitive right out of the gate, and I think that the future is very bright, assuming they do the right thing and take a longer term approach.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what kind of a team you end up with. I think that once, and obviously we're going to talk about this a lot, but I think once we see what all the side deals are and stuff, I think the actual roster they're going to have is going to be weaker than people are expecting. You know, some people are looking at the available player lists and the protected lists and saying, holy cow, they're going to have all these guys. And the other thing, too, that I've noticed is that some teams have, like Minnesota has a whole bunch of guys that I would be interested in taking, but you can only get one. It's not like you can take three Wild players and you can have Eric Staal and Dumba and Scandella, and, you know, it's, you only get one of those guys. Or Florida's got a whole bunch of interesting players, but you only get one of them. So, and then there's a whole bunch of teams, there's guys, you know, I wouldn't want anything from those teams, and they're going to have to take somebody.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I thought we would devote this show to doing something resembling a mock draft. Obviously, you know, we're acknowledging the monkey wrench thrown into things with all the side deals, and you know, there's going to be a certain number of players as you mentioned that are technically listed as being unprotected but actually aren't, and when we get around to them, we'll kind of try to work around it. But I think this is more to be used as a bit of a thought exercise to get the wheels in motion and get us thinking about what this team's going to look like philosophically, as opposed to some sort of a definitive list that they're going to enter the 2017-18 season with. So with that out of the way, are you ready to do this thing?
Yeah, and I think what we can do is that if there's a side deal, we think with some of these guys, we can just say who the second choice should be. Yeah, let's do it. Are we doing alphabetical order?
Well, so this is what I thought would be more interesting, because we could do alphabetical order, but I thought that, you know, that would be a bit all over the place and take too long. Instead, I put the teams into like four or five different groups based on sort of similarities with what they're providing or the situation they're in from Vegas's perspective. And I thought we could kind of just discuss them that way. And, you know, I think we should just get the teams that we suspect have side deals right out of the way, because I think that's just the easiest way to do this thing. And you know, the team that's obviously going to jump into the forefront here are the Anaheim Ducks, because when you're mocking out what this team could look like, it would obviously look significantly better if you put Josh Manson or Sammy Vatanen onto it, because they'd instantly just become the de facto number one defenseman on this projected Vegas Golden Knights team. And it seems like they're both off the board here because the Ducks have struck some sort of a side deal. I'm very fascinated to see what that side deal looks like, because I think the Ducks are going to have to pay a pretty exorbitant price. Like, if Vegas is doing this right, they could really just essentially like ask for the world, because I mean, Vatanen and Manson are both good players in their own right, but for Vegas to stay away from both of them, I can't imagine what the Ducks are going to have to give them to make that thing happen, especially since there isn't really an obvious third player available for Vegas to take instead.
Right. That's what I was going to say, is that you look at what the, like, if there was someone, there's talk about Columbus having a side deal as well, and it's like, well, at least you're going to get, there's a player that makes sense for them to take after they protect a couple of guys. Anaheim, that's not the case. So you're basically going down from, I mean, I like Josh Manson. That's who I would take if he was available. But you're going from a Josh Manson who, like you said, can be playing your top pair right away. And then what are you getting? So, you know, I think it's going to have to be more than like a first-round pick. You know, Anaheim's first-round pick is going to be right near the end of the first round. I don't know if that's enough to justify not taking Manson, is it?
No, I think it's going to have to be some sort of a package. I mean, I've seen people speculate that it would involve, I don't think Brandon Montour is going to be available, but maybe like someone like a Shea Theodore, or even a Jacob Larson, who's a first-round defenseman they took earlier, or Sam Steele, who they took in the first round last year and really exploded in junior this season. And it'll be something like one of those guys and a first and something else.
Okay.
Like, it's just, I mean,
right.
I love
that makes more sense.
I love Josh Manson, and I also really, really like Sammy Vatanen as well. I'd love to have both guys on my team. But you know, from Vegas's perspective, if the Ducks are willing to give you this package that involves like three or four premium assets, all of a sudden that's a pretty good way to start, considering you're starting from scratch essentially if you're the Golden Knights.
There's some of these teams like the Ducks that are in win now mode with their core, like Getzlaff and Kessler and Perry, that are getting older and they need to keep going for it. And they're probably going to overpay to keep, you know, more NHL ready guys than some of the guys you're talking about that were playing in San Diego this year in the AHL. And they were looking at moving a bunch of those young defensemen. I heard their name in rumors all year. So it doesn't surprise me that that's the kind of move they're going to make. But imagine if Vegas makes like eight of those kind of deals, how many good prospects they're going to have.
Well, yeah, that's the fascinating thing here. I mean, realistically, I mean, there's three or four other teams here we're going to mention that we suspect they have side deals with, and they could come out of this with like three or four first round picks, and all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of, the draft really is a crapshoot. It's a numbers game, and they're lottery tickets. But if you're accumulating a bunch of those, all of a sudden you like your chances of at least hitting one home run and getting a guy who's going to wind up being a really good player for you moving forward.
Some people are saying they could have six first round picks. Like, it's crazy what people around the league are talking about with Vegas right now.
Yeah, George McPhee should just stay up there on the podium during that Friday first day of Friday.
Yeah, well, it's too bad the draft isn't in Vegas, I guess.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I, I, I guess we have to assume that they have struck that deal. They're not going to take either of these guys. It's tough. It's so tempting to just put Josh Manson on this team because all of a sudden it would look so much nicer if you're projecting him moving forward. But I think if they are getting like that Shea Theodore type and then picks as well,
right.
That's an interesting spot for them.
It doesn't really matter who they pick then, right? Like who cares who they take off this available list?
Yeah, it was between like Nicholas Cordelis or like Logan Shaw. It was basically just going to be a throw in for them, kind of like a depth filler, just because of the technicality that they have to pick one of these guys, but it's not going to be an impact player. So the Columbus Blue Jackets are the second team I had in this group, and it seems like, you know, Aaron Portzline's reported that it's basically Columbus is going to give them that first round pick, which I think is either 24th or 26th overall, and they're basically just telling them to either take William Carlson or Matt Calvert, I presume. That's what it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, they want a bunch of guys protected as well, right? They don't want Corpusalo to be taken. I guess Jack Johnson is potentially off the table on the side deal, although I know some analytics folks probably would say don't take him. I mean, you know what I was thinking looking at some of these lists is that teams like Minnesota and Columbus that are built not with like high-end guys like Chicago and Pittsburgh, but that are built with depth and really good third and fourth lines, they kind of get punished more than other teams because they seem to give up better players than a lot of other teams.
Yeah, it's kind of the blessing and the curse of you're a really good team, but then that means you have really good players that you're going to lose some of, and I guess that's just what you got to deal with. I still think it's probably better than the alternative of just being like one of these teams like the Arizona Coyotes or something who just have nothing to take from because they're just a very,
sure.
very bad hockey team.
But it's like it's not even like Minnesota is a really, really great team. Like they're good,
yeah.
but they're not, you know, some of these like good teams that are built a little bit differently might lose better players than, you know, it's almost like Florida, Columbus, Minnesota could lose the best players and not Pittsburgh. It's not, you know, Washington or, I mean, I guess Washington's going to lose a decent player too, but anyway, so I don't know who they're going to end up with Columbus because it sounds like they're protecting a whole bunch of these guys on the available list.
Well, so I wonder, is it's been rumored also that David Clarkson's contract is going to be thrown into this? Like, that seems like a
yeah.
pretty decent deal for Columbus if they're giving up a late first to shed that much money, which it's also reported might open the door for them bringing in a guy like Ilya Kovalchuk in free agency and then also, you know, protecting Corpusalo and a number of other guys and basically just giving away like a fourth line player. Like, that seems like I'm generally against overvaluing your own assets and giving up premium picks just to keep your own guys, but from Columbus's perspective, that type of a deal actually seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we don't know the full. What I'm hearing is that for Vegas to eat a big salary, and there's a whole bunch of teams that are looking at trying to get them to do that, they're charging a lot for that. So the team that I heard yesterday was Tampa Bay is looking at doing that. In terms of big salaries they've got, I mean, I guess it could be Ryan Callahan or maybe Jason Garrison or someone like that. Tampa's cap space is a bit tight. But the other team that I think might do this is Dallas because they've got the three goalies. I mean, Dallas would love to have Vegas claim one of those goalies, probably Kerry Lettinen. But, I mean, what would they have to pay for that to happen? It's going to be really fascinating when that team's announced because I think there's going to be a bunch of big, bad contracts that they've taken, and we don't know the full ramifications of why Vegas has done that until afterward.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. All right, let's move off of Columbus here because I feel like we've talked as much about William Carlson and Matt Calvert as we can at this point. The New York Islanders.
I like William Carlson.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I mean, his nickname is Wild Bill. I mean, he's a former top prospect. He's shown an intriguing upside. I think that, you know, he's the obvious pick there. With the Islanders, they're the most confusing of the bunch because I've heard so many mixed reports on. Like, it sounds like they're giving up their first-round pick for sure, which seems a bit crazier considering none of the players they're protecting are that, you know, that impressive, and it's going to be a decent, like, mid-first-round pick as well. And, you know, they went with an interesting approach of protecting five defensemen, one of whom was Adam Pellick, who I think they you know, could have left unprotected without worrying about him being claimed. But I don't know. Like,
and DeHaan isn't protected.
Yeah, and Thomas Hickey, and then obviously all their forwards, guys like Bailey and Strome and Brock Nelson. And so, you know, we've heard rumors that their first is going to, steer Vegas away from their forwards, and then that might leave a guy like Calvin DeHaan available, or that might include DeHaan as well, and then all of a sudden Vegas needs to take either Thomas Hickey or, you know, a less desirable contract like Casey Cizikas or something. Like, I don't know, where do you think this is going, and have you heard anything about what those protections actually are?
No, not really. I mean, they're picking high, right? I mean, I look at this draft because the Leafs are 17. I looked really closely at the middle of the first round, and while there's a lot of talk about this not being a good draft or a deep draft or whatever, I think that you can get a really good player in the middle of the first round. I mean, it's kind of like the talent that you're going to get at about 7th, 8th, 9th overall is pretty similar to what you're going to see around 14, 15, 16. So if they can get in into that range, you know, just for not taking some of the Islanders players, I mean, that seems like a good deal for Vegas. So, and they obviously have the 6th overall pick already too.
Yeah.
And the guys I like on the available list is like if they could get a Brock Nelson, I mean, that guy can step in and be a really key piece of, you know, my concern with Vegas is the forwards are going to be exceptionally weak. Hmm. I wonder if they're going to be active in free agency or what they're going to do. But if Nelson is protected, as I assume he probably is by the side deal, and DeHaan is protected, then, you know, it gets a little bit dicier. Maybe they can get a Josh Bailey and give him more ice time and see if they can get more out of a guy that used to be considered a top prospect.
Yeah, or even a Ryan Strome. I mean, you know, when I was putting together the list of what this team could look like, you're right, the forwards, like, they're going to have a couple of lines and certainly players that are sort of like feisty, valuable depth guys, like second, third line types, but they're sorely lacking the sort of top of the line offensive talent that's going to be able to, you know, drag their line mates along with them and really move the needle. And they're just going to have to get creative by obviously getting as many draft picks as they can and hoping they hit a home run with one of those guys. And then taking some of these guys that have either been stuck in the AHL or down in the depth chart on their NHL teams and just hoping that by giving them more ice time and better line mates, they're going to realize that potential.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's the toughest thing for them is going to be generating goals, unless something happens that I'm not seeing in free agency or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. The last team that I have on in this group of teams with suspected side deals is the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, this was like the first sort of rumblings we'd heard. This was weeks ago that there's some sort of a deal involved where the Blackhawks are basically going to get them to take on Kruger's contract and Trevor Van Riemsdyk is going to be involved. I guess I'm okay with that. Like, I would have, you know, in an ideal world, I would have personally just gone with a guy like Ville Poka instead and not taken on that type of money on guys that I don't think are that useful. But I'm, you know, getting Kruger and Trevor Riemsdyk isn't the end of the world. They're both sort of decent end of the roster contributors, and it is what it is, I guess.
Interesting play maybe on Chicago's part where it's like, we'll give you two useful players for us to keep someone we perceive as a more valuable prospect that we definitely want to keep. Because, you know, I don't know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, watching him, I'm not sure what his ceiling doesn't seem super high. He might just be a third pair guy. I know people in Chicago are getting kind of frustrated watching him. And I think we all know what Marcus Kruger is. I mean, he's a defensive fourth line center. So, you know, it doesn't seem like they're getting super high there, but again, we need to see the full kind of package that they get in order to decide if it's worth it or not.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, this is the great example of what you were talking about, how some of these teams are built, because the Blackhawks are such a top-heavy team with so much of their money devoted to the stars. And, you know, past the top guys that they're protecting, there really isn't much to pick from. I mean, beyond Kruger and Van Riemsdyk, it's pretty bleak. There's very few guys that you could all of a sudden bring in and actually expect any reasonable contributions from.
Yeah. Well, in a way, that's good. I mean, teams like can't really afford to lose too many more quality players given what's happened to their roster the last few years.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, so I'm going to provide a couple options with you in terms of which bucket we dive into next. Do you want to go with the teams? Do you want to get the teams out of the way that don't really have anyone appealing, and we can just cross them off and just pick whoever? I think that's the way to go here, rather than saving it.
Okay, let's do like lightning round fast on those teams, though, so we don't spend too much time.
Okay, we're gonna do 30 seconds.
How many do you have?
Five.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yeah. I have five, and we're going to do 30 seconds each, 1 minute tops. If you go over, there's going to be a buzzer that sounds, and it's not going to be pleasant for us or the listeners. Okay, the Arizona Coyotes. It's between Teemu Pulkkinen and Alex Burmistrov, basically, right?
Yeah, Pulkkinen just bounced on waivers a whole bunch of times. Yeah. What about, like, Louis Domingue? Maybe he's... I mean, I know they're going to have lots of goalies.
Yeah, I'm not... I know that you wrote about this, and I completely agree that an interesting strategy for Vegas is to sort of corner the market this summer with the goaltending and just take four or five of these guys and hope... either, you know, see who pans out or try and flip them for future assets. But I'm not very optimistic about Louis Domingue as being any,
yeah, well,
any sort of difference.
He's about seventh on my goalie depth chart. So it's just with some of these teams where there's nothing else to take, you know, maybe that's a guy who can be your number three goalie and he plays in your AHL team or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe just take Pulkkinen and hire like the best skating trainer in the world and hopefully improve his skating a little bit and maybe all of a sudden you get yourself a cheap, interesting goal scorer. But
yeah,
it's not,
I don't mind that idea. Yeah. But I just, with so many teams kind of passing on him, I wonder.
Yeah, it is one of those things. It's disappointing because, you know, he was a very analytically friendly guy in terms of how many shots he generated and how well he was playing at the AHL. And you sort of use the projections and try to extrapolate that production to the NHL level. And all of a sudden he looks like he could be a useful contributor, but it does seem like he's one of those, you know, 4A type players, as a baseball term, where he just can't get to the same spots and can't get the same type of breathing room that he got at the lower levels. And all of a sudden that just dramatically decreases his, what he's able to do on the ice. So,
all right. I think the buzzer's going here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're done with the Coyotes. The Buffalo Sabres. So similarly, I took Linus Ullmark with that same sort of philosophy that you took Louis Domingue with, because I'm not infatuated with a guy like William Carrier, for example. So why not just take Linus Ullmark and hope that he pans out?
Yeah, the only thing that interests me about Carrier is that Buffalo fans seem to be a bit worried that they're going to lose him. So maybe there's something there that I didn't see this season. But I like Ullmark too. I mean, big guy, some good numbers in the minors. I'm big on Swedish goalies in general. I think that they project really well. So, yeah, I don't mind that. Honestly, like, I don't know if we're going to talk about this at the end or not, but, like, I would take a lot of goalies, you know, and if you end up not getting anything for them, I don't think it's the biggest deal. But if you can get second and third round picks for those guys, that's more than you're going to get for the skaters that that Buffalo's got available here.
Yeah, I have to be honest, though. If you could get Cody Franzen, who's currently a UFA and on a cheap deal just because no one else wants him, I would be okay with that as an alternative for what you're getting from the Sabres.
Sure. But you probably don't need to claim him in order to sign him, right?
That's true. Yeah, you're right. It's better asset.
But the other option they have, like, they have to take a guy from some of these teams. So if there's literally nothing they want, they can just take a pending UFA and then they're not tied to a contract with that guy.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Okay, I'm glad we got the Sabres out of the way in under 30 seconds. That was good. The next team here is the Edmonton Oilers, and I have one name here, and I think that it could be sort of a mutually beneficial thing where Vegas takes Benoit Pouliot's contract, and I think he has 2 years left, $4 million per, and obviously he's not worth that, but maybe the Oilers throw them some sort of a, you know, second, third round pick or whatever to take that contract, and Vegas puts him in more of a scoring top six role, and all of a sudden, you know, next year in at the trade deadline, he could become a guy who you can move as a rental. So I think that's the best case, because I, you know, Griffin Reinhardt is someone who has been speculated on, but I just don't really think there's anything there at this point.
I know some Edmonton fans are worried about Jujhar Khaira.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm butchering his name, but you know, that's, I mean, I know he didn't have huge production in the AHL, but he's a big kid, and I know that they see him as a potential piece. So I like the Pouliot pick's okay, too, because he's a guy, I think some of these guys Vegas could take, play them in a relatively high role. They're going to produce more than they have typically in their NHL career, and you can potentially trade them at the deadline and get an asset back for them that way.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen time and time again that so much of this stuff for a lot of the guys that are sort of stuck in that middle range in terms of ability and productivity is usage. And if you give them some nice minutes playing with other good skilled players and give them a bunch of power play time, like, you could easily see Benoit Pouliot score like 25 goals and all of a sudden become a useful trade piece.
Right, and that's what we've seen with the Leafs is, you know, P.A. Parenteau did that, and, you know, they brought in some of those guys, and they gave them opportunity, and some of them took advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the Los Angeles Kings. I had Braden McNabb here. I guess you could make the argument for someone like Nick Shore, but it's not great. They're another one of these teams that's very top-heavy, and even some of the guys, like, they protected a Derek Forbort, and you're just like, is this really the point that we've gotten to with this team, who was winning cups not too many years ago?
It seems like it. I kind of like Nick Shore. I might take a chance on him. I know he's going to be 25 in September, so, you know, he's a bit old, but he did play 3 years of college, so, you know, he could be a bit of a late-developing guy. I think that there's more offensive ability there than we've seen. He had over a point a game in the AHL a couple of years ago, so I might take a chance on a guy like that. And you talk about giving someone more ice time and more opportunity, I think that potentially he could be more than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, you know, especially, I mean, he was playing on that, you know, bottom six with guys like Trevor Lewis and Kyle Clifford and right. Dwight King and stuff. So yeah, I agree, if you give him some better minutes, he could be useful. The Vancouver Canucks, I guess Brendan Gaunce, he's a failed former first rounder who could be a decent sort of possession fourth line type, but I guess that it's he's really like the only appealing option. They don't even have any sort of contracts that you could do a Benoit Pouliot type of thing with, since they chose to protect Brendan Sutter for some reason. So it's the Canucks are an interesting run group at this point.
What about like some of these young defensemen like Biega or Pedden? Or I mean, you would know these guys better than me. Is there anything there at all?
I don't think so. I think you know, taking a guy like Brendan Gaunce, and he's still in his early 20s, and could be a useful depth NHLer, and maybe something more develops there. But if not, at least he has a place in the league. I think that's probably the route they should go here.
This guy's one of my favorite stories, Borna Rendulic from Croatia.
Yep. Yeah, former, he was on the Avs for a while, I believe.
Yeah, not that I'm saying they should take him. I just wanted to point him. I wanted to point him out.
Just for the stories.
He's from Croatian NHL player. That's amazing.
That's true. Yeah, good point. Okay, so I think we're done with this group, and I think we actually did a pretty good job. The buzzer only really went after we got into that spirited Teemu Pulkkinen discussion. Okay, so I let's do the teams that have one obvious player that I believe stands out from the rest, and there's like seven or eight teams here. The Boston Bruins, it's Colin Miller here, right? Like, he is an analytical darling who keeps posting great possession numbers, and it's weird that the seems to have fallen out of favor with the Bruins, and they never really gave him the proper amount of ice time and usage, considering that he also matches the eye test, where he's this big guy who can still skate and move the puck and has legitimate skills. And I just don't understand why he sort of never really got the type of opportunity that he should have in Boston.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's have you ever heard of like the, I can't, I think it's called the Joe Smith theory. I can't remember who put it forward. I think it was Colby Koch or someone like that. Hmm. The Joe Smith theory is that if you have a name like Joe Smith, it's harder for you to stand out, especially if you're kind of like one of those guys. So maybe a Colin Miller, not a lot of people know about around the league just because his name is Colin Miller.
I completely buy that. I mean, he doesn't really seem like a sexy type of pick or a sexy type of asset, but he's got good numbers. He matches that when you watch him play, and he seems like he would be one of those guys where if they put him on their second pair and actually gave him the right type of usage, he could really spread his wings and do some good stuff for them.
And the Bruins protected Kevin Miller, but not Colin Miller.
Yeah, their priorities are in an interesting spot, and so is their talent evaluation. Let's leave it at that.
I saw someone posted the draft list last year for the first round, and only three players, or was it 2 years ago? What was the year that the Bruins had the three picks all in a row?
Yeah, it was
anyway, someone posted
ago.
The, yeah, 2 years ago, was when the Leafs took Marner, and all of the players at the top of that draft had all played in the NHL except for the three Bruins picks. So if you go look at that on HockeyDB, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Okay, the Carolina Hurricanes. It's Lee Stempniak here, and you know, we've discussed this online. It's it seems like it really is his destiny to get drafted by the Vegas here, get used what nicely, be pretty productive, and all of a sudden get traded yet again at the trade deadline as a rental asset, and then get another contract from some other team next summer as well. So it seems like we could really just, you know, Lee Stempniak playing for all 31 NHL teams isn't play at this point, I believe.
He's 34. I don't think he's going to. It's too bad. You know, Lee Stempniak is a super nice guy. I got to know him a little bit when he played for the Leafs. And we always talked about Suitcase Sillinger with Mike Sillinger. He's got a chance to surpass Mike Sillinger. Sillinger played for 12 NHL teams. Stempniak's like 10 right now. So if he plays for Vegas and then another team at the deadline, he'll be at 12. And as you said, if he gets another contract next year at 35, then he can set the record. I don't know if that's on his bucket list to set that record, to be honest. But can you imagine how many different houses he's owned and how many different places he's lived? And I get confused when I'm in like four different hotel rooms in the span of like 8 days. I can't imagine living in that many different cities and playing for that many different teams. His man cave in the basement probably has like he can like wallpaper the entire thing around with all the jerseys he's worn.
Yeah, and he's cursed by the, you know, it's a perfect storm because he is a very useful NHL player, but he's not so good that like he needs to stay on one team. So I guess it makes sense that that he's moved around as much as he has.
Just like Mike Sillinger, same kind of, you know. Yeah.
The Dallas Stars, I included them here because I think if you're picking a player, I would take someone like Cody Eakin. I know that he had a dreadful season last year and was injured and nothing really came together for him, but if you look at the track record before that, it's pretty promising, and he's on a reasonable contract, and the Vegas Knights really need guys who can play down the middle, so he could fill a hole there. But as you mentioned, if Dallas is willing to get into some sort of a deal where they give up an asset and get them to take on a goalie contract, I could see that as well. And it's not like I'm so in love with Cody Eakin that I would forego taking on future picks just so I could have him.
So obviously, Vegas is going to be strong in goal. They're going to get some good goaltenders there. They're probably going to have too many goalies. Mm-hmm. Let's say they take Carey Lehtinen and his huge contract, and they don't have room to play him. Like, is there potential that either he plays in the minors or he goes back to Europe, and then the contract, they don't have to pay him all that money? Or, like, I just wonder what's going to happen in that situation if they do agree to take Lehtinen. If, like, I wonder if he just goes back and plays in Finland or something.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it seems like it would... It would be a pretty big ego killer and a pretty big step down for him to be playing in the AHL at this point of his career. But I guess we've seen it with guys like Jaro Halak and stuff, so it's certainly possible. I'm not sure how that would play out, but I think if they did take on his contract, based on the other options they're going to have, especially in terms of youth and guys they want to give more playing time to, it seems unlikely that Carey Lehtinen would actually play any games for this team.
I look at like some of the D that Dallas is making available, like Jamie Oleksiak's a guy that's interesting just because of the size that he brings. Patrick Nemeth has had like really serious injuries, but I know that they're high on him there in Dallas. Mm. You know, if there's not a side deal, maybe one of those guys could be a depth defenseman for Vegas.
Yeah, no, I'm still willing to give Cody Eakin a shot. I think if we were having this discussion last summer, he would be a no-brainer. Yeah. He probably wouldn't have even been left unprotected. So I like the idea of buying low on these guys, even though you are taking on that contract of his and seeing where it goes and hoping that he reverts back to his career norms versus what he did last year. But the Detroit Red Wings. I think this was the biggest misstep in the entire protection process, and I have absolutely no idea what they were doing or what they were thinking when they protected Jimmy Howard over Predrag Mrazek, other than good old Kenny Holland again, showing off his loyalty to veterans and guys that have been around there for a long time.
I think what it shows is that they're not that high on Peter Mrazek. Like, they just don't. He had a really tough year last year, and I think it soured them on him. But, you know, you and I both know how variable goalie performance can be, and it could have just been a down year, and that what he had done in the previous seasons could be more reflective of what he actually is. So, yeah, I mean, I like taking a bet on him, whether he ends up playing for you or whether you trade him to someone else. He's the kind of guy, he's a young goaltender that I think that, you know, other teams are going to be interested in.
I have a theory, and I think that, you know, it's going to be something that's going to be impossible to really prove until we do have full-time tracking data and we can really just map this stuff out systematically. But like with a guy like Petr Mrazek, who is, you know, so active in net, and he is all about movement-based, sort of like a Jonathan Quick type. For those type of guys, we never really talk about the interplay between them and the defenseman in front of them. Like, we talk about, you know, shot quality and how many high-danger opportunities you're giving up. But just the fact that he didn't really have guys around that could sort of, you know, protect him from those east-west passes when he was out of his crease and clean up the rebounds. Like, we saw throughout this playoff run what Nashville's blue line was able to do for a guy like Pekka Rinne in terms of really insulating him and helping him look a lot better than he actually was. And, you know, if a guy like Pekka Rinne was playing behind this Detroit Red Wings blue line, I think that his numbers would just fall off the map. And I'm not surprised at all that Petr Mrazek had a rough year considering what was going on in front of him. But I would also, once again, bet on the track record with him. And whether it was the OHL or the ECHL or the AHL or even limited time in the NHL over the past 6 years prior to last year, he was one of the best goalies in the league pretty much everywhere he played. So, and he's like 24 or 25 years old, and it just seems like putting too much stock into what happened last year is just a really bad miscalculation. But considering the way the Red Wings have been operated the past few years, I can't say that I'm overly surprised by that.
You look at the games he has played in the NHL, he's played about 100 if you include the playoffs. You're right. I mean, I mean before last season, he had played about 100 games and a save percentage of over .920. I mean, that would put him among, obviously the sample size is smaller than you want, but that would put him in pretty high. Even if you include last year, .901 save percentage last year, he's at .913 for his career. That's not that bad. I mean, that's, if he ends up being a .913 guy, that's fine as a backup goalie. So, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he deserves another shot. So I don't know if you're thinking that Vegas's netminding tandem would be Fleury and Mrazek, but if it ends up being that way, I think that would be totally fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just see if one of those guys does really well or garners a lot of interest, and all of a sudden they become a very tradable asset. So I think that's a no-brainer from their perspective. The Nashville Predators, I think just based on what we've discussed about how sorely they're going to be lacking offensive talent and guys that can generate goals, I think James Neal's a no-brainer here, especially he's on the last year of his deal, and he seems like he would be a guy that could potentially even fetch like a first-round pick at the trade deadline. So I think you just got to take him here, even though they do have some other younger, intriguing options.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, to me, it would depend on what you think the ceiling is for guys like Pontus Aberg. Like, is he going to be... Just because Vegas's window where they're going to be more competitive is a couple of years from now, if you feel like one of these younger, or Colton Sissons, or who obviously really stood out in the playoffs, like if you think those guys are going to be, you know, second line guys, they're going to be impact players, you know, I can see certainly looking at that. But yeah, I mean, it depends how heavily they weight being competitive right away.
Right, but like I said, I think that, you know, Neal is in that nice little kind of best of both worlds zone for them, where he'll help them right out of the gate, but will also serve them well in the trade market, and I think that sort of puts him over the top for me here, because you're right, you do have to weigh those things, and you sort of gotta look at what the sort of opportunity cost is here, because you can only take one guy from each of these teams. But I still think that Neal plus whatever he nets you at the trade deadline is more valuable, although Aberg certainly did. I've been corrected by my Swedish followers. I believe it's Aberg. Looks promising and definitely has that type of game-changing speed that we've seen can be so impactful in these games in this modern NHL. So I would think long and hard about him, but I went with Neal here.
I lean towards going like almost all young guys and just the team being absolutely terrible, but I can see why they don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's tough.
Like they're gonna get so many picks and prospects and everything through all these side deals anyway. So I would lean towards anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, James Neal does make sense in that you're going to be able to move him for something. Yeah. I guess the question is, whatever pick you get for him, is it worth more than another player you could take?
And the interesting thing is, you know, I would believe that in theory they could move him for a decent return before he even plays a game for them. But at the same time, it's weird if that's the case, why Nashville wouldn't have just done that themselves then.
Right. Right.
Unless they were just kind of banking on the fact that they do want to protect Aberg and were thinking that if Neal is also exposed, then Vegas would just lean towards taking him instead. But I could see that sort of thought process, but I'm not sure what they were thinking in that regard. The New Jersey Devils. So I'm assuming, based on what you just said about Neal and how you'd rather go all young, you wouldn't take Mike Camilleri here?
Well, it just depends what the other options are. Like, I just, like, what are we calling him, Aberg or Aberg?
Aberg, yeah.
What I saw from him in the playoffs was, like, really intriguing. And for that to be available for an expansion team, a player like that could potentially be, his numbers in the AHL were really good this year. And just, I don't know that the Devils have someone like that is as intriguing an option over a Camilleri. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's like a Bo Bennett type, who at this point we know is going to be sort of a third line, fourth line player, who's nice, and he posted really nice underlying numbers this year for the Devils. But I think with Camilleri, like, he has 2 years left on his deal, so he's not an expiring contract. But you know, he basically shot a career low last year, so his stock is at an all-time low. And if you figure that that's going to bounce back to more resembling his career norms, he could be in line for a really nice season. But the problem with him is he's so injury prone that it's also quite possible that he just never sort of plays long enough or well enough for you to wind up flipping him down the road.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's the kind of gamble you can afford to take, though, with how much cap space they're going to have, and you know.
I've always had less a soft spot for Mike Camilleri as a player. He's a fun guy to watch. He's always been more productive than I feel like people believe, and maybe because of his contract or because what's been asked of him, people have soured on him. But he's a productive, useful player, and with how sorely they're going to be lacking offense here, I think he could really be a nice little shot in the arm for them. So I went with Camilleri here just because there aren't really any other appealing options.
He's a great personality, too. I think he would fit in really well in Vegas. I think that he would sell really well to the fans if he's a guy that's playing on your power play and your first line. And more so than, I mean, James Neal kind of has the reputation for being a little bit of a sour guy. And I don't know. I mean, if you're thinking about it from that perspective and you're trying to rehabilitate a guy, both those guys are getting up there, though. I mean, James Neal is going to be 30. Camilleri's closer to 35. So I agree with you. I mean, Bo Bennett doesn't excite me too much, so I think that's the direction I would go, would be Camilleri.
That's fair. The St. Louis Blues, I said Petr Mrazek being exposed was the worst thing I saw in these protected lists. The Blues protecting Ryan Reeves over David Perron or even Dmitri Yaskin or even a Magnus Pajarvi, I mean, it's hard to defend. I'm all for good guys in the room and stuff like that, but it's a puzzling decision on their part.
Are they just trying to get out of a contract, maybe? Like, I know that they've had cap issues, and I don't know.
It's possible.
But I mean, pretty weird.
But I mean, with a guy like Perron, for example, I mean, he's on an expiring deal. He's making 3.75 next year. From Vegas' perspective, he seems like great trade bait, and he could, like, be their first line left winger or second line left winger and be nice. He's basically exactly what we just talked about with James Neal and Michael Camilleri, and he's not making that much money, so I'm cool with taking a chance on him. But you know, if you want to go more purely high upside, Dmitri Yaskin's always been a guy that's intrigued me. Hasn't really shown it at the NHL level yet, but had good AHL numbers and sort of has that big power forward profile the team seemed to stumble over themselves trying to acquire. So yeah, I could see
he needs more opportunity too, right? Like, he hasn't really gotten a lot of minutes or anything.
Well, that's the thing with the Blues. They've, you know, for years they've had so many, because they've drafted well, so they've had so many intriguing forwards coming up in the pipeline. Like, you know, a guy like Ty Ratty, for example, has been in their system and obviously bounced around on waivers last year, but another guy who produced at every level before but could just never get an opportunity because of how many guys were ahead of him on the pecking order.
Right. And now it looks like, but I remember last year looking at this and I was thinking Ty Ratty could be a target for Vegas, and then we're not even talking about him just because of the year that he had.
Yeah, there's better options. Either Yaskin or Perron there I'm cool with. With the Tampa Bay Lightning, I have Slater Cuckoo here, but as you alluded to earlier, if Tampa Bay, who could desperately use the cap space, if they are willing to give up an asset to get rid of either Brian Callahan's contract or even Jason Garrison at this point, I could see that being a very interesting mutually beneficial deal for both squads.
Yeah, it seems like something is happening there. I mean, people were saying that there's lots of rumors around the Lightning right now. So it's interesting, though, if you look at their cap situation, it's better than you think. Mm-hmm. You know, without having to re-sign Drouin, I mean, obviously they're going to have to give Johnson and Palat new deals, but then they still have cap space after that. So if they're also moving out Garrison, to me that says they're going to make a big play for something else.
Yeah, and that would make sense. And listen, I think even if they don't do anything, they're going to bounce back to sort of resuming their contender status next year. But if they could get creative and free up some more money and do some other interesting stuff to bring in some other pieces there, all of a sudden they could really put themselves over the top. So I would be exploring that if I were them.
I think they're going to be pretty aggressive. I think they're going to really try. And the other name that interests me is Jake Dodgkin, just because I saw him a lot in the AHL this year, and he played against the Marlies quite a bit. And he's a guy that pisses off the other team a lot and has a reputation for some dirty hits, but a lot of promise there. So I think the question would be, you ask your scouts, is, do you like Cuckoo or do you like Dodgkin better?
Yeah. Now, I was talking about this with some Lightning people, and I always sort of just naturally side towards a guy who profiles like Slater Cuckoo because he's more sort of projectable in terms of being a puck mover who can skate a little bit and bring some stuff to the table offensively, even if he hasn't shown it numbers wise yet. Whereas Dodgkin's a type of guy where he's purely sort of a defenseman, physical type, and there's certainly value to that. But he really just provides nothing offensively, and I'm not sure what his upside is in today's NHL. Keeping that in mind, but yeah, there's some options there for sure. I think that regardless, it seems like Vegas will probably wind up taking a defenseman from the Lightning, whether it's one of those young guys or whether it's Garrison's contract.
What's next?
Yeah, let's go to the Toronto Maple Leafs here. Hit close to home. It was either between Brendan Leipzig or Kirby Reichel. I'm not sure who you're higher on. I personally prefer Leipzig's AHL resume, but, you know, Reichel seems like he might be a higher profile prospect. I'm not sure. I like both guys in terms of giving them more opportunity and seeing whether they can convert some of that AHL success to the NHL level.
Yeah, I would go with Leipzig. Mm-hmm. You know, Kirby Reichel benefited a lot from really favorable minutes, good line mates, top power play unit in front of the net kind of thing. So, you know, I think Leipzig's going to be a little bit more of a creator, and, you know, he's a guy you give some opportunity on a third or a fourth line, and maybe he can turn that AHL production into NHL. We really don't know with Leipzig because he hasn't gotten a chance, you know, at all. And I think he deserves one, you know. But yeah. I'm pretty sure that's who they're going to lose. You know, outside shot, maybe they like Martin Marincin if they've got, like, a really strong analytics voice in Vegas. But, I mean, that's the kind of guy they could probably acquire with a draft pick or something down the road, because Marincin had a really hard time getting in the lineup last year.
Yeah, and if you think about just sort of maximizing your assets, they're going to have so many defensemen to choose from here. And, you know, they could really roll like 8 or 9 deep of guys who could legitimately play for their team next year and not just be purely rental types, but actually guys they like moving forward. So I just don't see where a guy like Marincin fits into that, whereas they're desperately going to need to take some sort of high upside, high ceiling home run swings on these forwards. And Leipzig seems like a guy who could really, really spread his wings with more opportunity.
Yep. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen, unless there's been a lot of talk in Toronto about a potential side deal where maybe they can get rid of Loophole to Vegas. So that would be a costly thing to make happen, but it would help the Leafs in terms of their cap situation for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with some of these guys coming up and needing new deals in that time. So now I have this next bucket here of teams that sort of provide a choice of, like we were talking about with Neil and Auberg, a cheap young player versus a pricier, more established veteran. And I'm curious to see which side you lean on here. And, you know, like the Calgary Flames are a great example because they have a guy like Matt Stajan, for example, who has 1 year left on his deal and is a proven NHL player who plays down the middle and could fit into the lineup right away and potentially be trade bait. And then you have a guy like Hunter Shinkurek, who used to be a really highly regarded prospect. And I think that if he'd shown better at the AHL level the past few years, like if he had the type of numbers that a guy like Brendan Leipzig had, I think it would be a no-brainer just taking him as a high upside guy. But his numbers were a bit underwhelming for me, so I could see the argument for taking Stajan and thinking that whatever pick you wind up getting for him in a trade might be as valuable or more valuable than Hunter Shikarek. I'm not sure where you side on that.
Yeah, Matt Stajan would be another guy that would be a really good face of the franchise early on and a good, like, ambassador. And he's a better player than I think he gets credit for, and good person. And I buy that. I buy Matt Stajan as, you know, he can be your third or fourth line center and be good for the young guys that you have there and all kinds of things like that.
Mm. The Winnipeg Jets, one of the few guys, I think one of only two, who actually waived their no move clause for the process of this was Toby Enstrom. He has 1 year left on his deal, and I think he's still a good player. You know, he's obviously lost his fastball a little bit. He's not as useful as he once was with his advancing age, but he could still definitely play on this Vegas team and be interesting in a trade. But then you have Marco Dano, who has been a longtime favorite of mine, and he's the type of guy who I think really has much more upside than he's shown, just because he's played on teams with, you know, deeper forward groups that haven't really given him an opportunity to succeed. But I'm still so intrigued, even though it's been a few years since he's really flashed it, with his offensive upside and what he could potentially do in the right opportunity. So I would roll the dice on him, but I could see the argument for Enstrom as well.
100% agree. I mean, there's a reason why Chicago wanted him in the Saad deal, right? And that, when that trade happened, he had 21 points in 35 games for Columbus as a rookie, as a young rookie. And everyone said, oh, Chicago wants this kid. This guy must be good. And it didn't work out for him. You know, he had a tough time in Rockford and didn't produce in the NHL. And now Winnipeg's got him, and he hasn't really produced much for Winnipeg. But I think you're 100% right. I think that they're just the potential that he has is something that you're going to want to look at. And he's, I think, got even more upside than someone like Leipzig. He's younger, just more of a, he potentially, maybe more upside, more downside, you know, it is. But I think for a team like Vegas, like you said, you got to take some swings at these guys, and you know what Toby Enstrom's going to be. You've got lots of other options on defense. I don't think that you need to bring a guy like that in, and I don't think you're going to be able to flip him for a really, really high pick either.
No, and the thing with Dano is, you know, it has been a few years now, but he had 21 points in 35 games as like a 20-year-old for the Columbus Blue Jackets before he got traded that summer. And just watching him, he sort of, I'm always wary of comparisons, but he really kind of reminded me of how Victor Arvidsson is sort of a darling now that's taken the world by storm, where he generated a ton of shots and he's sort of this undersized guy that just played way bigger than his actual stature and was just kind of like this bulldog who was just constantly barreling towards the net and flashing high in skill. So I'm all for taking him and giving him a big opportunity, and hopefully he'll take advantage of it and make me feel a little vindicated after pumping his tires for the past few years.
I did not know this, but he was born in Austria.
Yep. Yeah. And he's Czech.
He's Slovakian.
Oh, he's Slovakian. Yeah.
That's, you know, he's Slovakian. Yeah. Yeah. I just remember seeing him play at the younger ages internationally for Slovakia. So,
so the Montreal Canadiens here, you know, I've seen some mock drafts where people have given Thomas Plekanec to Vegas, and I think that would be a big mistake because he's got that name value, but he's not the player he once was, turtleneck aside. And Charles Hudon is a guy who fits that Leipzig mold that we just talked about, where he's been very, very productive, has never gotten the opportunity yet in Montreal, but seems like he could step in from day one and be a nice little surprise for them. So It's between Hudon or Brandon Davidson, who I like, but just based on that defensive logjam we talked about and sort of going for a more high upside approach, I went with Hudon here.
Yeah, I really like Davidson too. I mean, I think that he's an NHL player, and I was surprised that Edmonton traded him away the way that they did. So I'm okay with either one of those guys. It's just going to depend on the decision that they make in terms of other players that they're bringing in. So, I mean, at some point they're going to have too many defensemen, like you said, so you're going to need to try some of these forwards. I don't know how it's going to work with all of these guys and the AHL team. Like, most of these guys, because they've played their 2 years pro, are probably going to need waivers to go down. But it would be an interesting play if, I don't know if there are some of these guys they can claim that don't require waivers to go down, and they're, you know, that makes the decision easier because you can develop them another year or two in the minors.
Yeah, that's an important thing to factor, that I, you know, we're just talking about accumulating all of these assets and just making it a free-for-all, but you do need to take into account their status and whether you're actually going to be able to keep them or how it's all going to work logistically.
Yeah, well, with 30 guys, I mean, unless you go the Myrtle route and take 7 goalies, then
just start playing some of them at forward.
No, just have like a hold like an auction for the extra guys you decide you don't want. And maybe you go into the year with carrying 3 goalies on your 23-man roster, and then you have to trade a guy during the year at some point.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. It seems like a savvy way to manage your assets. The last team here that I have is the Ottawa Senators. And they have two sort of more established veteran guys in Bobby Ryan and Mark Mathot. And then they have two defensemen that probably aren't, I can definitely say they're not household names, but they're guys who I think people generally don't really appreciate, and Freddie Claesson and Chris Weidman. But both guys had intriguing seasons in Ottawa last year. And, you know, Weidman's a few years older. I think Claesson has a bit more upside, so I would probably lean with him. But, you know, I know as well as Bobby Ryan played in this postseason, I just, you know, he's a 30-year-old who's making like $7.25 million a year until 2022. I just don't see how you can do that unless Ottawa is really willing to pay some sort of a price for you to take on that contract. Otherwise, it seems foolish for Vegas to saddle themselves with that for no particular reason.
I guess devil's advocate on Claesson is that he's 25 years old in the fall, so it's not like he's a young prospect coming up.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, in just in terms of the other options, like I like Mark Mathot as
a lot
player.
Of people think they're going to take. Yeah, a lot. That's what I was going to say. A lot of people think they're going to take Mathot.
But I know what Mathot is right now, and while he's definitely an NHLer, just based on some of the other guys they're going to have there, I just don't see how he's going to fit in. Like, it seems foolish to bring him on and not be playing him, but then also likewise be playing him over some of the younger guys who you want to give more of that ice time and opportunity to. Like, he seems like a weird fit for this team, considering the trajectory we have for them moving forward.
I wonder if they claim him. I mean, he'd be pretty tradable, though. So I guess the question you have to wonder is, or the asset you're going to get back, is it better than a Claesson or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, he has a couple years left on his deal. He's already in his 30s. He's making 4.9 per, so it's not like he's on a great contract that someone can easily fit into their books. So I'm just not sure what the trade market is for him. But he is that type of sturdy veteran defenseman that so many teams seem to like. So I guess maybe if you fish around and you find out that, you know, like, he could be one of these perfect guys. We haven't really talked about this as an avenue for Vegas yet, but sort of being that third party broker where they just take a guy and instantly trade him away to some other team that's made their interest in him
right.
apparent to them.
I just know Ottawa loves the guy and they don't want to lose him. And that could be a side deal situation as well.
Mm. Yeah. I believe that. All right, James, we're done 22 of the 30 teams here, and we have eight of them left. We can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I think we've saved the best for last because these final eight teams are the ones that have a couple of intriguing names to choose from, and the cream of the crop here is the Minnesota Wild. We alluded to them at the start of the show. If you like defensemen, they have Matt Dumba, and they have Marco Scandella. I prefer Dumba because of his age and how he profiles moving forward. And then, you know, up front they have Eric Staal, whose resume speaks for itself, although his age is a bit of a concern for Vegas, based on what we've talked about so far. And Eric Halla, who's an RFA and sort of one of those speedy depth guys who could potentially be more productive if given more of an opportunity on a team that has less depth than the Minnesota Wild do. Assuming there's no side deal here, and that's a big assumption considering, you know, it seems like Minnesota may very well have gone into that thinking that would happen, because why wouldn't they have traded someone in like a Jonas Brodin? I would go with Dumba here, but I could see the argument for a couple of these other guys as well.
Yeah, I lean towards Dumba too. And I question whether he's going to be more than a third pair guy or not, but I don't think we know that yet. And perfect opportunity to see if he can bigger minutes, what he can do.
I've heard the argument for why they didn't make a trade is like, well, you don't want to trade away one of your defensemen and then still wind up losing another of them because all of a sudden you're down two guys. But
yeah,
like, if they could have gotten a nice, like, it was rumored that they could have gotten a first round pick for Jonas Brodin, I would much rather have a first and protect Matt Dumba than have just Jonas Brodin. Like, it seems like that is a miscalculation on their part. Obviously, assuming that there was that type of trade market for Jonas Brodin and it wasn't just purely speculation.
I guess then, though, they lose, you know, maybe they lose Staal and Brodin and just get a first round pick back. And, you know, this way they know that they're just going to lose the one player. And like, I'm sure they want to keep Eric Staal. He had a good year last year, and I'm sure they want to keep Halla. And I should, you know, so yeah, I thought there were going to be a lot more trades before just talking to teams. Teams seemed more confident they were going to be able to make deals and get something for these guys. And then when it came down to it, it was harder than they thought.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, devil's advocate in the NHL, it is always. I mean, we see it every trade deadline where we believe big stuff's going to happen. And then the conservative nature of all these teams and all these GMs takes effect. And we see teams stand pat. But it also leaves the door open for more side deals than we're thinking, having already been agreed upon just based on some of the ways some of these teams acted with their protection lists.
There's going to be like 7 to 10 side deals, guaranteed.
Yeah, which is, not that fun in terms of right now, but obviously when we get down to it, especially from Vegas's perspective, that could wind up being very, very resourceful on their part. The Washington Capitals, it's the classic debate here where if you're going to go with as many of your goalies as possible, Philip Grubauer is an interesting name. I personally love Nate Schmidt, and I think that he's probably not a first pairing guy, but I think like he could legitimately be a third defenseman on a team and like a very, very good fourth if you're classifying him like that. And I think that, you know, he just needs the opportunity because in Washington they had so many guys in front of him that he never really got to play the type of minutes that I think he's capable of. He's such a remarkable skater and has good puck skills while also being sort of good defensively and always being in the right position. And I think he's a perfect candidate for just exploding, given more ice time in Vegas. But if you're going the goalie route, Philip Grubauer seems like a pretty intriguing name as well.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried we haven't taken enough goalies. And I said I was going to go the goalie route, but Nate Schmidt, I was very impressed with in the playoffs, especially seeing him up close in every game against the Leafs. When Alzner came out and he came in, the series changed a little bit because all of a sudden that pairing was bolstered so much more having him there. So, you know, it's I like that pick. I do like that pick. I don't have a master list in front of me to know if what our team looks like positionally right now. It seems like we've taken off a lot of defensemen, so. You know, you can tell me at the end of what we end up with here.
Well, we have. I think we were going to wind up with a solid like 8 or 9 defensemen, but they're all going to be, you know, none of them are going to be the type of like old defenseman type that don't really provide a lot of utility. They're all going to be guys that can either play or be very useful trade assets. I mean, we've seen in this league at like every trade deadline, teams desperately crave puck movers and defensemen are hot commodities. So from an asset management perspective, it makes sense to take as many of those guys as you can and shift them. Like I truly believe that, you know, a useful defenseman who can actually play might have more trade value than sort of a marginal goalie in today's NHL, just based on what we've seen guys like even like a Ben Bishop go for at the trade deadline in the past few years.
Yeah. How many goalies have we taken though?
Well, we have, you know, we haven't talked about the Penguins yet. I wouldn't personally take Fleury because there's intriguing forwards to take from, but it's,
you haven't taken any goalies yet though. I mean,
well,
Petr
Mrázek for sure. Yeah. You know, we're going to get to Colorado here next. I would take Calvin Picard from them. You know, we've talked about Linus Allmark, for example, maybe even Louis Domingue.
All right. Okay.
Antti Raanta's coming up. There's like 4 or 5 guys. Don't worry. We're going to get your goalie fix.
All right. So I feel like I'm straying from what I came in planning to do. I've had a bad draft that way.
Well, or you could argue I've had a great draft. the Colorado Avalanche, who I just mentioned, you know, they do have, you know, like a guy like Mikhail Grigorenko, although it's been a while since he was a prospect, is intriguing. Mark Barberio, I would say, if we hadn't listed so many defensemen already, which makes me go with Calvin Picard as the obvious choice because, you know, I'm a little surprised that they didn't just protect him over Semyon Varlamov, just based on age and cost and their own time frame. Like, it seems like Picard is the goalie of the future. So I'm kind of confused that they were just willing to let him go. And I think that Vegas should take the opportunity to scoop him up.
Yep. 100% agree.
The Florida Panthers, and I'm very curious where you side on this because I don't necessarily think there's a right answer. I think it's sort of a subjective personal preference thing, but they have Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and Jason DeBurs here. Which way are you leaning on these three guys?
Roberto Luongo.
Are you actually?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Go with a Luongo Flurry 50-50 split.
I like Jason DeMers as a player, but I think he's the kind of guy you could either sign in free agency or they're going to be able to find elsewhere. So I go more with someone that can produce offensively. I like Riley Smith. I mean, great possession player, good point producer. He's young. I know the question with Marchessault is that he had really high shooting percentage. How much is he going to come down? Mm. How much of it was the result of who he was playing with in Florida? That's the debate for me, is Smith or Marchessault. And I know Smith had a down year last year, but he did the year before. He had the 25 goals and 50 points, and that was his second 50-point season. You know, I think that he's bounced around a little bit, but he's better than he gets credit for.
And I think the other factor to consider here, and it shouldn't necessarily be sort of the be all end all, but if, you know, if it's kind of a coin flip between Marchessault and Riley Smith, is the fact that Smith's under contract pretty much all through his prime for a pretty reasonable $5 million cap hit, whereas Marchessault has one more very cheap year, which is appealing. But after that,
he's UFA, right?
He's a UFA.
Pretty close to it.
Yeah, you know, he's a UFA in the summer of 2018. Yeah. And,
right,
you know, I can't necessarily see him being the type of guy that some team is just going to throw a massive contract onto just based on his pedigree and his size. But at the same time, if he has another very productive year, all of a sudden he could become more costly and lose a lot of that appeal of being a cheap guy. And considering how much money and cap space Vegas has to work with here, I don't think that his cheap contract is so incredibly valuable to them as it would be to other teams. So I'm with you. I think that Riley Smith is a very, very nice option for them to take here.
I think he could play on a first line. I mean, I think that he's really underrated. So it's a good get for them. And it's, you know, a product of Florida wanting to protect Petrovic and Pisek, who I know they were worried about losing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The New York Rangers. I guess we'll go with Antti Raanta here just because of what we've discussed in terms of wanting to load up on goalies. Like, when I did my mock draft, I actually went with Michael Grabner. But I just...
Or even Lindberg. Lindberg's kind of interesting, too.
Or, I mean, you know, Jesper Fast just had, I believe, a hip surgery, so maybe he might be off of their board. But he's also another guy who's sort of an interesting flyer to take on. Like, listen, Ranta's super cheap for next year, and he's been productive the past few years. I'm just not necessarily sure what... Like, I think people are overvaluing the goalie trade market here. Like, I'm not sure if they took Raanta, what they could conceivably get for him. I'm not sure that it's that much more than what they could get if Michael Grabner was on another 25-goal pace at the trade deadline next season. Like, I just think that's kind of... I think they're at pretty much comparable values, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I would lean towards Raanta just because I think that you can make some things happen if you have... If you're shorting the goalie market. But then again, if you have six goalies and you need to trade three of them, it might be tough to do.
Right. You don't have that much leverage. But at the same time, obviously, if another team comes calling and needs a goalie, it doesn't really matter how many you have. It matters how many they need. So the Penguins, like, I like Brian Rust. I like Carl Hagelin. I think this process doesn't have much practical value if we build our team taking those guys, because it seems very clear from what we've heard that Vegas is just going to take Marc-Andre Fleury and either use him or flip him to another team. Like, it's kind of a shame to me that I'm not sure what the asking price for him would have been, but I would have liked to see a team like Calgary not trade for Mike Smith and his contract and rather just wait and see what it took to get Marc-Andre Fleury, because I think that provided them with more sustainable upside and seemed like a better bet. But I'm sure there's going to be some other team that will eventually be able to use a Marc-Andre Fleury. And if not, he's a pretty stable option for Vegas to start off their inaugural season with.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing that Calgary went that route, because I think they've got one of the best decors in the whole league, and they've got some good young forwards. And, you know, I thought they were going to have a better year than they did last year. And one of the big reasons they didn't is that they had troubles in goal. So I think if you bring someone like Fleury in there, that absolutely, I mean, he was a perfect option. And I know that Calgary looked and really tried to get Frederick Anderson out of Anaheim, and they looked at Ben Bishop. Calgary's been pushing for a goaltender for a long, long time, and for them to settle on Mike Smith being the guy, it's a shame, you know. And I could see him, given his age, having a poor season and kind of sewering another year for them.
Yeah, me as well. So it's kind of disappointing because I like that team otherwise, but what can you do? Okay, so we got two teams left here. One of them we probably could have discussed in an earlier bucket, but I just put him in here, and it's the Philadelphia Flyers. They don't have, you know, super impactful players here, but they do have, you know, your pick of the litter of Michael Roffel or Matt Reed or Jordan Wheel, and all three of those guys you could talk yourself into. I think it's another personal preference thing. I've always had a soft spot for Michael Roffel. I mean, I guess you can make the same argument for Matt Reed as well, but they're sort of these analytics darlings who always post good possession numbers and have good 5-on-5 production, but haven't gotten the love because they don't pile up the counting stats and aren't big names. But Jordan Wheel, you know, former prospect, always showed really well at the AHL level and really looked impressive towards the end of the season in Philly. He's an RFA and needs a new deal. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. So any of those three guys, really, I don't think you can necessarily go wrong with.
Amazingly, Matt Reed is 31 years old, so that surprises me.
Yeah.
So, you know what, I do like him. I think just like if you just measure like pure talent and what they bring to you right now, he might be the best, but the other guys are younger and, you know, maybe Jordan Wheel's a guy that you can give more minutes to and more opportunity, and he's going to do something. I mean, he had big seasons in the AHL the last few years, so I don't mind that move either.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And the last team here is the San Jose Sharks. And they have three defensemen to pick from. You know, Paul Martin, David Schlemko, Brendan Dillon. I personally like Schlemko the most here when you factor everything in. But I don't know, where are you at on those three guys? Which one do you prefer from Vegas' perspective? Or is there another guy that you're sort of circling? Because I know that if you're going goalies, maybe I've heard a guy like Aaron Dell as a backup is an intriguing option. But I think the defensemen are too good to pass up here for such a lottery ticket goalie.
Yeah, I agree. I was leaning towards Dillon, but I know that third pair in San Jose has been probably the best third pair in the NHL the last few years. And I think you kind of know what you're going to get from him. And I think you know what you're going to get from Schlemko. So, but they're going to give you good NHL minutes right away.
Yeah. I like Schlemko a lot. He's, you know, I like Dillon as well, actually. It's funny because when we talk about defensemen and, you know, who they play with as their partners, we look at stuff like with or without you numbers and evaluate them that way. But just stylistically, you could see the impact playing with a guy like David Schlemko had on Brendan Dillon versus what he had to do when he was playing with Roman Polak the year prior, where right. He was just a completely different player, just sort of more willing to actually use his natural physical skills in terms of skating the puck out and stuff, and just kind of playing a more open game, which I think suits him better and makes him more productive. So if you're going to play him with, you know, like let's say like a Nate Schmidt or someone like that on this Vegas team,
yep.
All of a sudden I think he
yep.
could be very, very good as well.
Yeah, maybe that can be a second pair for you even. You never know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like that. All right. We've done our due diligence here. We've somehow picked a guy from all 30 teams. Some of them were some of them were the equivalent of pulling teeth, but I think it was a pretty fun discussion.
So, how good do you think that team is?
So, here's the thing. I think they're going to be competitive. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, but I don't think they're going to be like the worst team in the league. I think that they could be somewhere in that sort of 21st to 25th in the league range, but with that in mind, like it depends on how many of these side deals they make, because they could be that type of team while also having, you know, five first round picks and a bunch of future assets as well, and all of a sudden they're
yeah.
gonna be okay yeah. out of the gate, but their future is gonna be incredibly bright. And I think that if they play it right, there's no reason why they can't have that type of an organization, and that's exciting. I think that, you know, that's gonna be great for the NHL in terms of sustainability, because we keep talking about, you know, hockey markets and whether after you know, hockey loses its appeal or loses some of that shine after the first few years in Vegas, whether fans will still keep going to the game and caring about the team and being able to support it. And I think if they build this right and they have an exciting young team for years to come, I don't see any reason why it can't work in Vegas.
Well, you know what? I think at the very baseline level of success, it's going to be a better market than some of the places the NHL is already in the U.S. I think that in terms of revenue, Vegas is going to easily surpass Carolina, probably Sunrise, Florida, Arizona. You know, they're not going to be, even if they're drawing revenue sharing, it's not going to be nearly to the extent that some of those other markets are. So, you know, that's kind of how I measure when you bring another team into the NHL, is that they've got to at least baseline be better than, you know, the weakest markets that you've got. And I think that Vegas definitely clears that bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. James, do you want to plug some stuff here? Like, what are you working on these days? I know you're a very busy guy. You're up to a lot of stuff.
Well, we just launched today The Athletic in Detroit with Craig Custance as mm-hmm. the editor of that website. And that's our fourth market for The Athletic. And it's the start of what I hope is going to be a pretty ambitious expansion project. So, you know, I hope that if people said, you know, I don't want to subscribe to read about the Leafs, I hope they see now that, you know, we're going to have Craig Custance is going to be writing about not only the Red Wings, but kind of league-wide NHL issues. I'm going to be writing more about other teams than just the Leafs next season. I hope that people that are just hockey fans will get on board and check out The Athletic and download the app, because it's a big part of what we're doing. And, you know, hopefully people can get excited about it, because I definitely am.
I am as well. That's huge. I mean, you know, people that are listening to the show and follow my work know how important Craig Custance is to the hockey world. And he's a huge get for you guys. I mean, he's one of the few guys who I actively go out of my way to see what he's written recently and what he said, because he's sort of, you know, he's very kind of open-minded in terms of applying some of this analytic stuff we're working on ourselves, but also he's got, you know, great inside sources and always takes intriguing angles, and he's a great hockey writer and a great hockey mind. So I'm really excited to see what you guys get going over there at the Athletic Detroit branch.
Yeah, great. Appreciate the plug.
All right, James, I appreciate you coming to take the time. Hopefully this expansion process and what this team could look like is a bit clearer to all the listeners out there, and we'll get you back on the show sometime down the road.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Wednesday how close with the team they pick looks like the one that we picked. Maybe we'll do some kind of a comparison or something on Twitter.
I like it. All right, chat soon, buddy.
Yep, see ya.
The Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Follow on Twitter at @DimFilipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypdocast.